Welcome to MCC from the Capitol, a podcast produced by the Missouri Catholic Conference. We invite you to listen along as our host and executive director, Tyler McClay, chats with experts about public policy issues from a Catholic perspective. We hope you enjoyed this episode of MCC from the Capitol.
Welcome to the Missouri Catholic Conference from the Capitol podcast, where we take a deeper look at the social and political issues facing Missouri and the Catholic Church, and how those issues impact public policy. Today, we're going to focus on vaccines for COVID-19, and specifically, we're going to address the safety and efficacy of those vaccines, as well as the moral and ethical concerns about taking them. The first two vaccines the FDA has approved for public use in the U.S. are the Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine. These vaccines use newer technology to stimulate an immune response in the patient rather than utilizing traditional vaccine technology, which involves giving the patient a strain of the virus itself to stimulate an immune response. In clinical trials, the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines have been found to be between 90 and 95% effective. We will be discussing some of the medical issues surrounding these vaccines with Dr. Keith Starkey, a medical internist and a member of the St. Louis Coronavirus Task Force. We will also be discussing the Missouri Bishop's decision to issue a statement saying that it is morally permissible for Catholics to take these COVID-19 vaccines as a means of protecting public health. Some Catholics have raised concerns about vaccines being developed using fetal tissue from abortions, and we'll be discussing those concerns with Bishop McKnight of the Diocese of Jefferson City. My first guest is Dr. Keith Starkey. Dr. Starkey is an internist and recently retired from his position at the Mercy Hospital System, and he's currently serving as a senior advisor to the Mercy System and also serves on the St. Louis Coronavirus Task Force. Welcome, Dr. Starkey. Thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here, Tyler.
And I really appreciate you coming on and being on the podcast. We were talking today at the end of January, and obviously things change day to day with this vaccine rollout. But can you tell us where things stand right now in terms of the 7-day rolling average of new cases of coronavirus and also maybe like the status of the hospitalizations in Missouri?
Happy to paint an overview. So the good news is at the moment we are seeing some significant decreases in both the number of COVID positive tests in the community. So that's we hadn't seen that for quite a while. And then we're seeing a decrease in the number of hospitalizations, both from a 7-day average in the regular part of the hospital, but also in our ICUs. So certainly some indications that this most recent surge is now on the downstream, and hopefully going forward will continue to head in that direction.
Well, that certainly is good news. And I know you all in the hospital systems have been dealing with this for almost a year now. For those of us that don't work in a hospital, can you kind of give us a picture of what it's been like for you and how's your staff dealing with it?
Sure. So to your point, this has been a long time for healthcare. We've never been through a period like this where the level and intensity of the patient care has been so high. So at the beginning of the pandemic, there was certainly a lot of unknowns and the availability of personal protective equipment for our hospital caregivers, which created some real significant challenges at the time. Since then, we've learned a lot about how to care for our patients more effectively. Our supplies are where they should be. But the biggest challenge has been that the volumes have continued to increase until, as I mentioned just recently, and it becomes an overwhelming challenge for caregivers who are dealing day to day with very, very sick patients. Sometimes it's described, it feels like a battle zone. There's just so much activity going on with all the things that need to be done to care adequately for these very sick patients. And at the same time, we have not seen the number of patients within our hospitals who are dying and from COVID and the impact that it has on our community, as well as the staffs that are in the hospital. They've never experiencing anything like this in their careers. So it is quite stressful for them. I think when I talk with particularly some of our nurses and physician leaders, the sense of we do have this, we can manage through this. And when they see light at the end of the most recent tunnel, it certainly is encouraging and helps them get through that. But so the good news, as I mentioned, is that the numbers are heading down, but based on what the science is telling us, particularly about the new variants, we are anticipating another surge in March, which will put stress back on the hospital systems and our communities.
Well, so obviously that even makes the point, although we're seeing a reduction right now, the importance of getting vaccinated just all the more accentuated by that expectation, right?
Yes, Tyler, I agree completely. We have a couple of things that we can do to try and decrease what we call the prevalence or the number of cases in our community. The vaccine is the best weapon that we have to be able to decrease that, followed by the important things that we've all learned about with importance of masking, social distancing, and hand hygiene, so that for those people who we may not realize, they may not realize that they actually are contagious with the virus, that we can minimize that exposure to other members of our communities.
This vaccine rollout, it's been going for maybe 6 or 8 weeks now in terms of vaccination. Have you learned anything new about side effects or complications from these vaccines?
I think the overall experience has been positive. So yes, I think we've had some important learnings. We know that some people will experience, particularly with the first shot, some very mild symptoms. Most experience minimal to none with the first shot. Second shot can be a little different in that there are a number of people who will get moderate flu-like illness for a day. And then there are others, a significant percentage of others, who really don't experience any significant difference and go about their day as if nothing had really happened. So the good news is, even though there are people that are experiencing that one day of feeling, just not feeling themselves, they may experience some fever and body aches, the protection that they're getting by going through that one day really does outweigh the illness itself, which can be quite debilitating. I think the other piece is the number of more significant complications are really minimal at this point. We've seen very few. Now, it's been several days since I've looked, but within Mercy Health System, we had, as of several days ago, we had only had one or two people who had each of our facilities who went to the emergency room, but were able to be treated and go home after that. So from a safety perspective, this is really where we hoped we would be. And then from an efficacy perspective, we're in a much better shape than what we would have experienced with the typical flu vaccine or others. So it's in terms of protection and risk of having complication, the protection far outweighs any of the potential risks that we're seeing at this point.
Do the risks impact different demographics? Like, are minorities more impacted with side effects, or young people or old people, or is it pretty much the same across the board?
Yeah, great question. It's still early in terms of really being able to assess that. But from what we've observed and some of the anecdotal experience, it does not appear to have any significant difference in terms of those receiving it, whether age-related, gender, race. It does not seem to, there does not seem to be a increased risk in different populations that we can tell at this point.
Well, that's good to hear. You know, prior to the FDA approval, we were told that the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines were 90 to 95% effective. And are you seeing that hold true for the most part, or is it too early to tell yet?
It's still a little too early to tell for the current population that we're vaccinating, but it does for some of the study groups that have, as more time has gone on and that in the study groups have enlarged, or suggests that it remains high, very high in that same neighborhood of about 95%.
And as far as we know, at least from what I've read, it appears that these vaccines are effective against these new variants. Is that what you're hearing too?
So yes, one of the challenges we have with this coronavirus, this COVID virus, is that it, just like the common cold virus, which is a relative of it that human beings have dealt with for centuries, those viruses change. That's why we get colds periodically. So we're going to see, and we have seen some of the changes already occurring in some of the countries across the world. And we're going to be influenced by those. The good news so far, and it's still early, is that these newer strains, they may impact somewhat the effectiveness. But as Dr. Fauci's pointed out several times recently, it does not appear that it's any significant impact, and that the protection of the vaccine is still quite high. Even for these new variants at this point.
Well, that's good to hear, because I know a lot of people are concerned about that. The Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are using a newer technology, and they came to market very quickly. But we were talking about this the other day, and my understanding is this technology has been in development now for some time. Isn't that right? This isn't exactly, they didn't just start this whole cloth, you know, last year.
That's right, Tyler. I mean, interestingly, the researcher who actually first started working with this and saw it as an opportunity with this particular way of approaching it, the messenger RNA, it was over 30 years ago that she started the work. It really was about 10 or 11 years ago that the research got to the point where there was clear recognition that there's a real opportunity here. And part of the reason that it took a long time to get there is that the particle itself is actually very friable. It can be broken by our own immune system very easily. And so early on, it was challenging to come up with something that would really be effective. But about 10 years ago, they were able to come up with something that would stabilize this particle and then allow it to get at least to get far enough into our immune system that our bodies would start to produce the antibodies that we want to kill off the virus. The reason that when it comes to research, particularly with vaccinations, it is a very expensive process. And so pharmaceutical companies were willing to go so far, but really did not have the need several years ago, or even certainly prior to COVID, to really move that forward without knowing the true benefit. When it became clear that COVID was going to require a new approach, what happened was the federal government actually guaranteed payment for the vaccines to be developed. And so rather than going through a step-by-step process that typically does take several years, multiple steps were taken at the same time. And because they didn't have to prove each step before the next investment would be made and that it was successful. And so by the federal government, in essence, guaranteeing the pharmaceutical companies, there was huge acceleration in what would have taken much longer normally, and allowed that to happen in less than a year, which all of us have just been amazed and frankly thrilled that we've been able to get something that is effective that quickly.
It is pretty amazing. And you mentioned the messenger RNA, and probably most of our listeners will have no idea what that is, but just to be clear, unlike other vaccines, with this vaccine, you're not actually getting COVID. You're getting something that convinces your body to produce antibodies to something like COVID, right? I mean, it's a simple way of explaining it, but I think that's correct.
That is correct. So with some vaccines, you do get the viral particle, the DNA, but in these two particular vaccines, messenger RNA is basically a vehicle to help build proteins. And it's those proteins that are the antibodies that provide the ability of the body to get rid of them, to destroy them with our own immune system.
And some have sort of been worried that by getting these newer technology vaccines, that somehow it was going to alter a person's DNA. Is that the case?
No. So the way this, and again, this is unique to this vaccine, it does not enter the cell nucleus, which is where our DNA is located. It actually works in essence, some of the factories of the cell that are outside of the nucleus. There is no risk then to getting into the DNA of our cells.
And is there any negative impact to a person's immune system by receiving these Pfizer or Moderna vaccines?
We don't believe so. Certainly from what we know about the way this messenger RNA works, it really does simply create an object that now our immune system reacts to, so that it believes that object is similar enough to the viral particle that when it does, if the virus does get into our system, it is recognized by that antibody, and that protein is able to, in essence, block the spikes of the virus from getting into our cells.
You know, one other thing I've heard too is people are concerned that this particular vaccine causes infertility. Is there any truth to that?
You know, it's amazing how sometimes misinformation does get in social media, and then clearly it would be concerning to any young person, woman or male, who's concerned about could this impact fertility. And the answer is no. The way this works is those viral those particles that are the messenger RNA, once they leave the cell, they are quickly destroyed by our body. They have no ability to sustain themselves. And we believe that they really don't get much beyond that area in our body where the shot's administered, basically the arm and the lymph nodes that are present in that part of our body. So any thought that it could impact fertility, it doesn't make any sense today of around how that would actually occur.
So for women of childbearing age, men that want to have children, they don't need to worry about becoming sterile somehow, getting vaccinated with this.
Correct.
And so do we know the ingredients of the vaccine? I know in the past there's been additives in some vaccines that people have been concerned about, such as mercury, or in some cases for pro-life folks, you know, fetal cells. Can you speak to that as to what's in them and whether there's anything to be concerned about?
No, happy to. So what's unique about these newer technologies, whether it's the messenger RNA that we're using here or recombinant DNA that's sometimes used in the flu vaccine, is that they don't require preservatives. Now, for the COVID vaccine, they do require storage in extremely cold temperatures to preserve them, but there are no preservatives like mercury or other ingredients that are used in some of the older vaccines that have been around for years. And by the same token, there are no fetal cells that are used either in the production of or in that are present in the vaccine itself.
That's true, not just for the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, but for the others like AstraZeneca. Even I think they might use fetal tissue in the production and manufacturing, but it's not actually in the vaccine itself, correct?
That's correct. There are no fetal cells in the vaccine itself.
And for Pfizer and Moderna, the fetal cells weren't used in the manufacturing or production, but they were used to test it for its efficacy, as I understand it.
Correct. So we need human cells, basically, to be able to test safety and efficacy of the vaccine early on. And so in those instances, that was where one of the fetal cell lines was being utilized.
So the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are given in two doses. When does the immunity become effective?
Yeah, that's a great question. What we're learning is that with the first dose, we are seeing reasonable levels of antibody by about 10 days to 2 weeks, but it's not where ideally it should be. And to really achieve the level of that 95% that we want to get to, it's about 2 weeks after the second dose.
Okay. And how long does that immunity last? Is that data known yet?
So we don't know yet. It does appear, at least from some of the early results, that it's going to be long lasting. At the same time, what some of the newer studies that the pharmaceutical companies are embarking on are, in essence, providing a booster and seeing if that doesn't help maintain the higher levels of antibodies as time goes on. So that's ongoing and will help us know whether we need to come back in a year, 6 months, whatever, to get a booster to maintain the higher level of protection.
Are there any patients who should not get the vaccine, like pregnant women or nursing moms?
You know, that's a really good question. And there's a lot of concern appropriate by women when they're pregnant. Could something happen? And the challenge is that what we've seen when pregnant women do end up with the coronavirus is some significant complications can occur both with mom and baby. And so the current guidelines by the CDC and the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology is that women who are pregnant should consider getting the vaccine. Now, interestingly, today, the WHO came out and said, well, we're not so sure about that. And what they said was that if women who are pregnant live in an area where there's higher risk, they should get the vaccine. But they didn't really define what that means. Right now in the U.S., we've got higher risk pretty much throughout the country. And so I think that it will, as time clarifies itself, we would still be considered in that group that even the WHO would support. They're really looking to see longer term results from with time. But as I said earlier, we have not seen any problems. And although pregnant women were not recruited for the studies, there were women who ended up being pregnant who participated in the studies, and at this point there have been no known side effects from the coronavirus vaccine on those pregnant women.
And would that same hold true for nursing mothers?
Same thing for nursing mothers. In fact, that's even because there is clearly no way for that to cross into the lactation of the mother, that there really is no risk for that for breastfeeding.
How about, has it been approved yet for children under 18?
Those studies are just being started. And my suspicion is that it won't take them long to demonstrate the safety. Early on, there wasn't as much concern about children because it appeared as if the virus didn't seem to affect children, or if it did, it would seem to be at a very low level. And what over time, as the number of people who got infected has increased, and that it has caused more significant illness in some children, some teenagers, including some who've died, there is definitely a recognition that work needs to be undertaken pretty quickly. The other piece of this for children is this more recently described post-infection inflammatory process that is affecting a number of children that is really related to an overreaction of their immune system. It's still early, and our ability to recognize it probably is still, there's still more work that needs to be done to understand it more effectively, but it is a concern, and so the more we're able to protect everyone, try and minimize any of those potential complications that can, although rarely, do occur.
Well, and we know just that the Hispanic community and the African American community has been harder hit by the COVID pandemic in many ways because of where they work or have to work and frontline workers, that kind of thing. Any concerns for that community as far as the vaccine goes?
I think the biggest concern is, as you mentioned, the fear that of the vaccine. In terms of risk to that those populations, there just does not appear to be any reason, either from initial results or from a science perspective, for those fears to be there. Certainly understand that reality, that with all the information and misinformation out there, it is easy to start to believe that it does pose a risk, but that is not true based on what we've seen at this point.
And just finally, can someone get COVID from the vaccine?
No, you cannot get COVID from the vaccine.
Okay. Dr. Starkey, thank you so much for taking the time today to talk to us about this. I know you've clarified a lot of things for me, and I hope for our listeners as well.
Well, thanks for the opportunity, Tyler. I really do appreciate it. And the more we can help people understand the importance of the vaccine to prevent disease and the safety of it, the better. So thank you.
Okay. Well, my next guest is Bishop Sean McKnight of the Diocese of Jefferson City. Bishop McKnight was ordained and installed as bishop in February 2018, and at the time was one of the youngest, if not the youngest, bishop in the U.S. Bishop McKnight, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Deacon Tyler. It's good to be with you.
The Missouri bishops, you know, issued a statement on COVID vaccines in late November. It was on the same day that Pfizer requested approval from the FDA for emergency authorization use of its vaccine here in the U.S. Why did you feel it so important to issue a statement on this issue?
Deacon Tyler, that's a great question. We bishops were very much aware of the controversy and concern from some Catholics and many who were claiming that to utilize these vaccines would be against the Catholic faith, very present on the internet. And we felt it was important to speak with clarity and with authority about what the Catholic Church actually teaches in regards to vaccines in general, but more specifically into the COVID-19 vaccines. And there are some significant and important ethical principles and moral principles for us to consider, ranging from how the vaccines are developed and used and making sure that that was done ethically and morally, but also on the other end of the spectrum, of the moral obligation and ethical obligations we have to do what we can to be good stewards of our own health, as well as the common good.
And the four bishops in the MCC worked on the statement together for about 5 or 6 weeks before it was issued. Mm-hmm. And I know it was reviewed by several medical ethicists, several here in Missouri, and also by Father Tad Pahulchik at the National Catholic Bioethics Center. You know, should Catholics who want to be vaccinated have any ethical concerns with getting vaccinated for COVID-19?
Well, I can say with regard to the available vaccines presently here in Missouri, no, there should be no ethical or moral concerns. There are issues, but in regards to is it immoral for a Catholic to receive either the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine, no. The concerns that we have about them is not that they, in the development of the vaccines, they did not use cell lines from aborted fetuses. However, those vaccines were tested utilizing aborted fetal cell lines from more than 50 years ago. So, you know, and medical ethics can get quite difficult and very complicated. And that's why we solicited the advice and the participation of several medical ethicists that we have a lot of confidence in, especially the good folks at the National Catholic Bioethics Center.
You know, some Catholics have said that, you know, it's wrong to use fetal tissue from aborted fetuses or from embryos in medical research, and that's a hard line, and therefore it's wrong to take these vaccines. But what you're saying is that there's a little more complicated than that.
Yes, it is. And in fact, we should always avoid, and whenever we have the ability to avoid and have a choice of vaccines, one that does not involve abortive fetal cell lines at all, even in the testing, versus one that does. Yeah, we would have an obligation to favor the one that has nothing to do, that is completely clean from the evil of abortion. But the problem is we're in a very difficult situation where the only available vaccines were tested utilizing the fetal cell lines. And again, from more than 50 years ago. So it is not as if that will encourage the practice of abortion today. That's one of the important principles to keep in mind. When you have to weigh the benefit of having the use of these vaccines for people who are, you know, perhaps their own health is compromised in some way and that they're more susceptible to COVID, and in fact, it might become more serious for them or even deadly. Obviously, we have to take into consideration the good of having that vaccine. And that's what the ethicists have done, and that's what the church has done. The bishops, the Conference of Bishops, even the Vatican have all looked into this. And with the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines, we do judge that it is morally licit to utilize them. But we have an obligation to speak our minds and to let, you know, the companies that are producing vaccines to know that, you know, we are doing this in a sense under protest, and that we would ask that they not utilize fetal cell lines from abortion, even from 50 years ago or more, in future vaccines.
And I think that was one of the things that I learned talking to Father Tad about this, was that these cell lines are from the 60s and 70s and maybe as late as the 80s, and they continue to be used and are propagated, but the actual tissue from the fetus itself is no longer part of the cell line. It's, used again and again or recreated over time, but it's not, you know, the same fetal tissue. And I think we learned from Dr. Starkey that the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines do not have within them, in the vaccine itself, any fetal tissue or even resulting tissue from that, because it's not even in this thing itself.
That's correct. And that would make it even more, that would be more morally problematic, obviously. So we're talking about the remoteness of the evil that was done. Utilizing these vaccines does not contribute to the practice of abortion today. And that's what is of moral concern.
Well, and I think even there's AstraZeneca, they've got one coming along, and then Johnson & Johnson, and those did use these same cell lines in the production and development. And so those are a little more morally problematic, correct?
They would be. And therefore, since we've got the option of the Pfizer and Moderna that are less morally problematic, we have every obligation to avoid the AstraZeneca and Johnson vaccines. So I'm just grateful that they're not even an option here presently here in mid-Missouri. The ones that we do have available, we are, as bishops of the state of Missouri, we are in agreement, and we encourage our Catholics to get vaccinated in order to protect their own health and the health of others.
Now, if it came to be that AstraZeneca and Johnson got approved, and then someone facing vaccination only had that as an option, would it be morally licit for them to do that?
Yes, it would. Again, for this very same reasons. If there's no other option, then you can, but sort of under protest. And there is the obligation that we speak our mind and let people know that this is not in accord with our wishes. But that doesn't prohibit us from using them because of the good that could come from it.
Well, and I think, too, that there was, you know, the end user, the person getting vaccinated, part of the thinking is they didn't have anything to do with that original abortion. And it's not like taking the vaccine is going to result in more abortions. And so the end user is different from, say, the person who uses the cell line to develop it.
Correct. That's a very good point.
The AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson cell lines are similar to a situation we've had for years and that we've been dealing with as a church. And that has to do with the childhood vaccinations for mumps, measles, and rubella. Isn't that right?
That is true. You know, again, the MMR was developed not completely in accord with our specific wishes as Catholics, but because we don't have any other option, the church has judged that it's better for us to make these vaccines available to our children because of the health benefit. because we do not have another option.
And again, those can be used under protest, as you mentioned. And I know the USCCB is putting together a letter that folks can send to the pharmaceutical companies in the event they're faced with that situation. And we're going to make that letter available on our website. So,
yes, once we've got sort of the guidance and the language, because when we protest, we want to make sure it's going to have an impact and that we are accurate and strategic in terms of whom we're going to protest to. So that is being organized now, and I would encourage, once the Missouri Catholic Conference makes that available, I would encourage all the Catholics in our state to make their feelings and their thoughts known to those who are responsible for producing vaccines in our country.
Getting back to the MMR vaccine, and it's kind of similar now with COVID because we have these new variants, and we don't even know yet. They're spreading more quickly with the new variants, but we don't know about whether they're more deadly or not. It seems like so far they're not. But, you know, with MMR, the mumps, measles, and rubella, when children remain unvaccinated, that puts moms and children and pregnant women and others at risk when you lose the herd immunity, right?
Yes, and this is what we have to remember. It's just not about ourselves. There are people who have medical conditions which prevent them from taking the vaccines. But the more the community can achieve this herd immunity, then they are protected as well. But if we don't do our part, those of us who can receive the vaccine, we don't have allergic reactions to them or any other medical issue, we're then exposing or making it more likely that those who have a severe issue with them might get it. So that's what we have to keep in mind. With our Catholic faith, our Christian faith teaches that we're not just concerned in living for ourselves, but we got to live for others. And we have to take the common good always into account, and not just our personal preferences, our personal liberties, but what is necessary for the common good.
Well, and I think that that's a really interesting point that sort of distinguishes Catholic thinking from perhaps other religious traditions, that we live in community. Our faith tradition is part of community. Our salvation comes through community. And so we're always thinking not just about ourselves, but of others as well.
Right. And in fact, that takes a certain priority. And as we've, you know, one of our social justice principles is the preferential option for the poor. And, you know, we can understand that too, in terms of health, those who perhaps have a medical issue, which would prohibit or preclude them from taking a vaccine, we have to do our part to help protect them by getting vaccinated ourselves.
And so if Catholics choose to remain unvaccinated for whatever reason, what duty do they owe to their fellow citizens and their fellow Catholics?
I've spoken and I have talked with a number of Catholics who have qualms of personal conscience, or they have just their own opinion about the medical validity of vaccines, even unrelated to the whole abortion question. And of course, people have to follow their consciences. But when you know that you're not vaccinated, and then I think all the more it is necessary that one observes the reasonable measures to help limit the spread of the virus. And so the social distancing, the wearing of masks, and other things even become more of an obligation for the individual Catholic who chooses not to get vaccinated.
Is there anything else, Bishop, that you'd want to add based on interactions you've had with folks about this issue?
Well, just to be clear about who speaks with the moral authority of the church. And there are a lot of people, you know, especially in this day of the social media and the internet, anybody can say whatever they want. And sometimes that leads a lot of people into confusion. So I would just counsel that everyone, while there is freedom of expression and communication and people can express what they believe, but to be able to speak in the name of the church, that's for us Catholics, that's reserved to the hierarchy, the Pope and bishops in communion with them. So I would encourage those who are seeking what is the position of the church to look to the bishops.
When I thought it was interesting to see maybe a week or two ago that Pope Francis and Pope Benedict both received the vaccine there in Italy. So,
yes, indeed.
Leading by example, as it were. So we are going to have more information about the medical questions and some of these ethical issues in the diocesan newspapers. But we wanted to make this podcast also so that people could get this information in a different format. So we hope you've enjoyed this conversation, and we look forward to having you with us the next time.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of MCC from the Capitol. To hear more from the Missouri Catholic Conference, visit our website at mocatholic.org. That's mocatholic.org. Or subscribe to this podcast on Spotify.